Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 4 of the Overthrows podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find absolutely everywhere. So lots to talk about today, and we have a few people in the comments already. Jessica Bell is really excited that she finally made an episode of Uncovered Live. Yeah, because we chose
me
to record it a human time. Yeah. And DM95, Sheraton KD, Srinath Narayan, Niraksh, Santosh Kumar, Shri, all of you guys are over here and we're chuffed to have you. So let's start with the big one. India have taken a 2-1 lead against England by giving them an absolute 434-run hammering in Rajkot. And Jared, this was an interesting game. It's not like India were always on top. You know, they were initially 33-3 in the first innings. Then at the end of day two, It felt like England were on top because Duckett was going crazy. They lost Ravi Ashwin mid-test and he, of course, returned, but they lost him. So one would assume that England were in a better position, but they still managed to give them a pounding.
Yeah, and not just a pounding, right? Like the eighth biggest pounding by terms of runs in the history of the game. I mean, if you go back to it, Joe Root dropping Rohit Sharma when they were, what, about 40-3, I want to say, maybe 45-3 at that stage. It's kind of the difference between the two games. Like, you know, if Rohit doesn't go on to bat the way he does, who knows what this game would have been. So, you know, fascinating from that point of view, I suppose. And England was certainly all on top of India. But I don't think there's another situation where a team could be 250 runs behind where everyone was so confident about them. And I understood it. And I certainly could see why people were saying that. But I was very much in the camp of everyone, they still need to score another 200 runs. And 200 runs is a long way away. The credit I would give for India's victory outside of, you know, the batting, obviously, which was fantastic, is probably just when they tried to hit Kuldeep out of the attack and they tried to hit Siraj out of the attack. And that's what England have been doing. There's been a lot of discussion in this test about how baseball doesn't work anymore because this is literally the first time we've seen it not work. We've seen them lose before, but this is the first time we've seen it not work. And yet, they had a chance to get rid of Rohit early on and they went after Kuldeep and Siraj. And if you look at the figures of Kuldeep and Siraj on that second day, it looked like they were going to hit them out of the attack, right? And clearly Jadeja wasn't. I think his hamstring got better throughout the game, but he still certainly wasn't fit. Ashwin wasn't there, which was a complication none of us expected. But the point being that there was absolutely no doubt when you looked at the way that this game was going that if Kuldeep or Siraj or both had been knocked out, England probably come back and at least get very close in this game. So people are like, oh, it doesn't work. It's like, well, it was also the thing that kept them in this game to begin with. So it's a really, really interesting one that at the end of day two, I think Ashwin said the game was quite level. You know, and that tells you that, A, how much baseball fries people's brains, but also that we are expecting magical things out of them. This time, there just wasn't any magic, right?
No, none whatsoever. And it's interesting. Of course, they did try to hit Siraj and Kuldeep out of the attack, but in Ashwin's absence, Siraj then took 4 wickets. But to the point where everyone is slandering baseball, and I haven't even read anything yet. I almost assume that everyone is saying that baseball has failed and it was a terrible idea to begin with. And I saw a tweet which said that...
You are correct.
Yeah. There was a tweet that said that shoot them all and replace them with 7 Dom Sibleys. I really enjoyed that one.
No, that's we can all get behind. Yeah.
But what I want to talk about is, does this happen because... the point where you said that after day two, everyone was feeling rather confident and you still said that 200 runs remained. Is it because of the way they project baseball? They've said that they're saving test cricket 10,000 times. I believe Duckett and Ollie Robinson said something along the similar lines. And then also, they've defended it at every single step along the way. Like, there is no accountability. Does that kind of factor into A, the belief system of the fans, and B, the reason why they get bashed like thrice as much as they probably deserve to?
Okay, so if you watch Ben Duckett specifically bat on day two, it felt like he had completely upset India's plans. Like Ashwin didn't bowl particularly well. Jadeja couldn't bowl because he was injured. And Kuldeep went at 6 or 7 runs and over, I want to say, and Siraj went at six or seven runs and over, right? At that stage, you're looking at it go, and then overnight, what happens is Ashwin goes home to look after his mother, yeah. right? So at that stage, you can understand why people are looking at this going, well, they've still got, you know, Roots and Stokes and, you know, Bairstow and whoever else was left to bat, right? You know, coming in. Duckett's still at the crease. You can kind of understand why there was a movement towards them. But even then, it's like, and so much of what Bazball has done is it's warped out historical brains. Because every time we say, well, you can't chase 303 consecutive games or whatever it was. And it's like, yeah, we can. And so I think there was an element of that and all the different circumstances that came together. When they lose, right? And it's hilarious in this one game that Bazball had everyone shook and then suddenly Bazball didn't work in the same game. Like, we lived a lifetime of Bazball in one game here, everyone. When they lose, I think that's when you get this. And on a smaller level, sorry, I did have a drink. I don't know where I put it. On a smaller level, every time England lose, Bazball loses, right? I'm not talking about that from reality, because it's not reality. Like, there were people in my comments yesterday, you know, we did a scoreboard after the show, and people are like, this proves the Bazball doesn't work and they should go back to traditional batting.
It's nah.
like, didn't their old batting prove that traditional batting for them didn't work? Like, people have forgotten how bad they were, right?
One day, and they're going to chase 600, and then all of those quotes are going to make sense.
but also, just you know, you look at it, they are playing test matches very differently to everyone else. And I don't just mean tactically. Listen to them. They say they are willing to lose some games, yeah. right? Which is how teams play one days and T20. And the difference, because they know you can't win every one of those games. Whereas we've been kind of brainwashed to think the best team always wins a test match, right? Which is broadly truer, or certainly truer than the other two formats, but it's not true, right? Teams don't go on 30 match winning streaks in test match cricket, right? Like, oh. Now we've got After Dark with Bayram.
yeah. Yeah. Luckily, we have the internet hooked up to the UPS or whatever, so the electricity going does not impact the show.
it makes you look like you're now an alien. I like it. But yeah, so, you know, you get to a certain point where, you know, the way that they are playing is, it is with an inherent risk, right? So think of the New Zealand test they lost. Think about the Edgbaston test they lost. They built that risk in for themselves, right? You know, and they afterwards, they were like, okay, we didn't get it right. They should have won both those tests, really. I think it was it Wellington, and it was also the Edgbaston ones. They should have won both those tests. But the way they would look at it is, okay, so if we go back to playing the way we were, those are better teams, and they probably just would have rolled over us, right? And people have forgotten that, right? And there's a lot of people who are willing to just bash Bazball at all opportunities because it's weird. And you know, first person through the door is always going to get that. But, you know, you see Michael Vaughan go, Bazball exposed. Yeah. It's like, Jesus, mate, you spent 2 years telling us that they couldn't fucking bat. Now you're upset, you know, that they actually did bat really well for a while in India. So I think we have to have that perspective, but you're right. You know, and I've talked about this a lot, of course, that the kind of Kool-Aid aspect of Bazball, of we're always on top even when we're not on top. And we meant to lose by 434 runs. In fact, it's a good thing we're chasing 550 runs. It's like, and this was the first time, and I don't think it was, I did a podcast with Bumble yesterday, which I think is up on the TalkSport channel. They look tired. Right? So if you've been out, the other team, what did India probably make in this test? 850-ish runs would be off the top of my head. It wasn't really, really hot, but it was hot. You can be as positive as you want. Joe Root looked fried. He's bowled more than he's ever bowled in his life before. It's hot conditions. He was out in the field for a long time.
He's forgotten how to hit the reverse ramp.
Yeah, but you watch him in that second innings. He didn't bat like Bazball in the second innings, but he looked tired. Him and Ben Stokes both looked physically drained, right? Which is what usually happens towards the end of a test match. England have, all to their credit, so far, because of the pace that they play the game, they don't get to a lot of fifth days. Their players don't get as tired, which means when they're tackling those chases at the end, they've got a little bit more energy. Well, India did the thing that I have been saying teams have to do against England forever, which is literally just make them field 200 to 250 overs, really keep them out there, because that is the major issue of baseball, which is if you're going to bat so quickly, right? If you're going to bat that quickly, that means your bowlers are not going to get the rest that they need.
True.
Right? And so if the other team does get on top of you and you can't manufacture wickets, which is what happened in this second innings, then you're in a lot of trouble. And England just looked tired. You know, the pitch didn't really suit their bowlers. It probably suited the Indian spinners a little bit more in this case. You know, Siraj obviously bowled a great spell in the first innings. England didn't really have a great spell of seam bowling, you know, outside the first couple of overs. And so there's all that. But yeah, you're right that if you're going to go around saying you've saved Test cricket and on all these other things, you can understand why there is going to be certain situations when people are just like, dudes, my dudes, like, you just got smashed in the face. And so we're going to laugh at you. And that's absolutely fine. When Australia went on and on about how dominant they were and they lost the Test match or they lost the series, this happened. The big difference was it didn't happen on social media.
Yeah, it definitely comes with the territory. And with all of those statements, people also, I think, are more likely to jump the gun. But let me tell you this, that with that Bumrah comment that they're not hitting anymore, there is a bit of a psychological blow over there as well. Like, baseball has taken a bit of a spanking because the Indian players are well on top and they really want to write their own narrative over here. Anyway,
just on that, what you just said, we have said from the start that eventually teams are going to learn how to adjust. India is adjusting in real time because of what Australia did, because of what New Zealand did, right? That any tactic, people are going to adjust to it, right? And so at this stage, that's going to happen.
Yeah. All right, super chat time. Ravi Teja asks, this talk, especially from the players, is getting annoying and sounds smug, arrogant. Someone should remind them that they have a win percentage of 55-60, and that's quite high for England, but nothing great. In the build-up to the Ashes, it was great. After the Ashes, there was the case that, rain kind of ruined it for them. They could have won it. This India tour was the real litmus test, and you'd always expect India to win this series, right?
Mm. Yeah, and they won the first test. I want to talk about the talk aspect. Ravi, you probably weren't around on the scoreboard that I did yesterday, but I discussed this. Anything you hear the England team saying at the moment, it is very clear they are not saying it for fans or media. They are saying it for the change room. So Ben Duckett, on top of the many random things he said at his press conference, at the end of day three or whatever it was, he said that Ben Stokes actually wanted them to get out in the field quicker anyway. So it was fine that they were bowled out for what they were.
Yeah.
Right? That's obviously nonsense, right? No one in the world doesn't think that's nonsense, right? The Jaiswal comment, right? Again, they're pretending that they're changing the game. So they go, Jaiswal's playing this way because of us. Yeah, because no attacking batters existed before baseball, right? It's not for us, Ravi. It is for the change room. And that is really, really interesting because generally that is not what you do. You try and placate your fans. You try and control the media. And England's going the complete other way. And I've seen other, you know, sporting teams do this before. And it's not something I really have ever noticed. I've seen coaches try and do this, but they kind of lose the will to push through it. And the players kind of don't do it. The difference here is they do believe that. So I don't have a problem for that. The win percentage of 55 or 60, I'm not sure what it is at the moment, which is very fair. But they did win a bunch of games against two very, very... they beat India and they beat New Zealand in four tests at home. They coughed up one against South Africa. They went one all in New Zealand, which, to be fair, I think, although who knows, I can't work out New Zealand's form guide after Bangladesh and South Africa A and all this sort of stuff. But the point being is, against very good teams, I think, they went to Pakistan and just absolutely destroyed, right? Like, and no one had any idea how it was going to go.
Forced results, I don't think, on anyone... roads, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I think they do, and having a 60% win percentage when you lost 12 games in a row is actually miraculous, Rabbit, right? I know that sounds stupid, but if you've lost, I don't know how many games they lost in a row, but, you know, one out of 12 or whatever it was, and you come back and you have a win percentage of 55%, like, that is a huge swing, like a massive swing. So, and they have changed Test cricket, Ravi, as well. To be fair to them, you listen to the other teams. Zimbabwe, Pakistan, openly saying this. Australia said to Travis Head, play your way. And he did. Then they said to Mitchell Marsh, play your way. It is partly backed on what was going on, with Bazball. They can lie all they want, but I know that there is an element of that, right? And teams are looking at Bazball and going, okay, what can we take? Or what can we do that's different? So they are making a difference. But it is important to remember that everything they say publicly, it's going to be mocked because it is going to sound stupid. But imagine what you are. It's a sort of thing of like, if you're in the middle of a cyclone, it's like, well, of course we'll get through this, right? As your house is being lifted in the air and spun around four times. That is what they are doing at all times. And they're doing it on purpose. And it's an interesting tactic. But yeah, it's supposed to piss people off because they don't care if we all hate them. They just want to win the long-term moral arguments. But they don't care if we hate their comments in that moment because they have already done things that none of us believe they could do. Remember that cricket is a funny game. 100 years before we protected our heads, players looked after their groins. So don't be as stupid as old cricketers and protect your computer today. NordVPN is the protection I use when facing cyber shortfalls or when rights issues try to dismiss me. NordVPN will help you get through the straight bat of any geo blocks so you can watch all the cricket you want. If you need your pitch changed, well, NordVPN can doctor any surface to a new location so that your IP address is set up for you to win. Want to buy an associate cricket shirt from a place that won't ship to your country? Select NordVPN. Want to watch a game on a free stream in another hemisphere? NordVPN. Or if you just want to watch a clip on social media that a cricket board won't allow you to, promote NordVPN to pinch it for you. So if you need a VPN, go Nord. Use nordvpn.com/Kimber to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, plus 4 additional months for free. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the show notes. Protect your computer like a cricketer protects its nether region with NordVPN today.
I mean, we'll see where this story ends, and it will make for a great book someday. We also have a bunch of other comments from Hari Krishnan, Bharat Raj, Zetiro, who is appreciative of the show. Thank you. And all of you guys, Himanshu, Swarup, if you really want your question to be answered, like Ravi, send in a super chat. We'll move on. And you mentioned how Ravi Jadeja, who was back from injury, wasn't fully fit, you know. And he was back in an Indian shirt playing at his hometown, bagged the Player of the Match award. And that was some performance. 112 runs in the only innings that he batted in. And then he also took 7 wickets in the game with a fifer in the 4th innings. So he has ridiculous numbers in this ground. I know you'll talk about that, Jared. But he also now has the most Player of the Match awards in India for an Indian player, level with Anil Kumble, 9. And he's played like 20 less tests than Kumble. So Jadeja really is that, unicorn in that Indian lineup.
It's at this ground, he averages 140 with the bat and 19 with the ball. I don't know if those numbers slightly changed throughout the game, but I can't imagine they would have changed all that much. He makes 100, I don't want to say on one leg. I actually thought he looked okay when he was batting. But clearly, like both innings, they didn't bring him on to bowl straight away. When he did bowl in the first innings, he struggled a little bit. And the first ball he bowled in the second innings, first 3 balls, have a look at his action. So when a finger spinner has a problem with their body, quite often they kind of force the ball up and it's almost like a throw. It just doesn't come out right. We can't actually tell if any bowlers throw because we could put sensors on their arms, but apparently that would be too smart. But I've seen Jack Leach do this before, and there was another finger spinner do this. Just if your body isn't working the way you want, you kind of have to force it out. And because of the way the off spin is, your arm just sort of, it either is more bent than it normally is. And sometimes people just accidentally throw it. And that you can see spinners sometimes look around as if they go, well, that wasn't right. And he fought through that until the end where he had a better rhythm and he understood how to make his hamstring work for him or that, you know, whatever it was, the lack of something that happens. And to go from there to basically being unplayable, it just tells you, I think sometimes with Ashwin, because he's such a brilliant athlete, and you know, we probably talked about this before, but if you want to be really, really clinical, Jadeja probably has high hard skill athleticism, so fast twitch muscle and you know, flexibility and strength and all that sort of stuff. And Ashwin probably has high soft athletic function, which is, you know, incredible control of his hands and his fingers and, you know, his body position and all those sorts of things. We don't always think of someone like Ashwin as being athletic, but it's a different kind of athletic. You know, the more we learn about athleticism, the more we realize actually we're being unfair to one group and everything else. But the important thing with Jadeja is when he first started his career, he was thought of as like an automaton, right? Dhoni says you bowl here, you bowl here, right? He's not quite that player anymore. And I don't think he gets enough credit for how smart he is. And, you know, watching him bowl in this second innings, I was like, oh, he's working through the physical problems here. And also he's worked this pitch out in a way that, and no disrespect to Tom Hartley, but Tom Hartley can't work it out, right? You know, he worked it out in such a way that probably even someone like Akshar Patel is just not, they're just not ready to do that. And we don't talk about that enough of Jadeja is not just come in and bowl sidearm spin, you know, pitching on middle stump and hoping it runs along the ground and the odd one spins sideways and he gets an edge to second slip, right? He's not that bowler anymore. There is a lot more going on with his bowling now. And I think this test match just proved what a smart cricketer he has become. And, you know, all-rounders mentally quite often are very, very smart. I mean, look at Stokes and Jason Holder, you know, Dan Vittori, you know, Imran Khan. And the reason that they are smarter is because they have to be on both sides of the ball at all time, right? They have to work out two different disciplines. And if you, today, do you want to throw in fielding, right? You know, it's three different disciplines that he is world-class in, right? And because of that, he has developed. And yeah, Ashwin probably came out of the womb thinking, if I change my wrist angle to here, I can do this, right? And Jadeja didn't do that. But I was watching him bowling and just thinking, oh, this is, I mean, before he started taking, before even, you know, England had started collapsing, I was like, this is over. Because they're not going to get to 200 because Jadeja is just on one. And, you know, he's just thinking on a completely different level.
Yeah, I mean, it was a phenomenal performance considering the injury and it was his hometown. Then the runs, then the wickets. I wanted to file a petition to President Modi or Prime Minister Modi that you should change the name of the city to Ravikot because Rajkot doesn't have the same sort of ring to it anymore.
Well, I mean, they changed the stadium name. I mean, I don't know how I felt about this because, you know, this naming same. Look, cricket administrators do a lot of great work, and don't get me wrong, but naming all your cricket stadiums after cricket administrators, I wonder if the West Indies haven't got this right. All right. And just the West Indies is just like, there's Darren Sammy, there's Viv Richards, there's Brian Lara. Great. They all get a ground named after them. And I know that's different because it's national identity rather than local identity and everything else. And, you know, but if you built a new stadium, you know, in Australia now, and it was, Australia's a bad example. If you built a new cricket stadium in New Zealand now, should it not be the Crow or the Hadley Stadium? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't understand. It's the players who put their body on the line. It's the players whose physicality deteriorates for our entertainment. It's the players that drag us to the ground.
It's ironic that in a few hours or a couple of hours, I'm out about to go to the Gaddafi Stadium.
What I mean? Like, I mean, that's kind of the most famous stupid one, right? But you go through it and I understand that there's political tensions and there's, you know, and you know, but if you're building a new stadium or you are going to change the name of a stadium, I think you should honor the people that went out there. I'm not sure there's ever been a player who's been better at one ground than Ravi Jadeja is at this particular ground, right? And like Dhoni basically built an international stadium by being good at cricket. Like, you know, and I think it's great that Darren Sammy has a stadium named after him, right? St. Lucia had never had players before and is a dual World Cup winning captain. Great, let's name it after him. I just think that there's so many felicitations and so many certificates given to players and everything else, right? Like when you walk in, I really think more things should be named after players, coaches, commentators probably as well, and administrators at grounds. There's so many random things at grounds that can be named after people in general. And I think that it's just let's start honoring the legacy of great players, past and present, of former coaches, of people who did special things for their nation, including the administrators. But I'm saying not every ground should be named after an administrator. There should be certain grounds that are named after administrators, but many other grounds that are named after either coaches or players or whatever it may be. I mean, the one in Ranchi should be called the Helicopter Stadium.
Yeah, I definitely second that. And it's surprising how only the West Indies might be doing this, and I haven't really seen it elsewhere. But anyway, moving forward.
It's been done in women's cricket, I should say, as well. I think there's a couple of women's stadiums. I think there's the Karen Rolton ground.
There is the Susie Bates
Oval. In a show. Yeah, so it's weird that it's happened more with women and not with the men. But you're right. I just felt wrong. We're at a ground when Ravi Jadeja averages almost 150 and under 20 with the ball, and we're like, and here's an administrator who gets. And I'm not saying he didn't do great work, because there are some special administrators out there who I think really deserve to be remembered and talked about. But the players do.
Yeah,
too.
I think the players have more of a stake in this. We've got another super chat by Ravi Teja, who's in a generous mood today. So we'll take that before moving on. And he says, it's criminal that you don't get more views on YouTube. Well, spread the word. Make sure that we do.
To be fair, we had a video that went up yesterday that had 25,000 views. Another one that's been up for 10 hours that's had about 80,000. So we're not exactly struggling.
The England batters don't seem to have the best technique to play test cricket long term. Do you see this batting struggle in the long run? It has worked also, though.
Yeah. I mean, they're doing this, Ravi, because they don't have a good technique, right? Like, you know, they were using, Rory Burns and Dom Sibley and all those guys. Crawley has a flawed technique. Yeah. Ben Duckett has a flawed technique. Ollie Pope is not a complete batter, right? They know this. So what did McCullum do? He said, okay, let's forget about your weaknesses and let's try and just play to your strengths, which is essentially what most players do, right? They play in a certain way that allows them to get around. Joe Root's reverse scoop probably came from the fact that he struggled against Bumrah, and he was like, well, if I do this and I get away with it, that is going to upset Bumrah, right? And Bumrah's not going to be sure exactly what the next ball to come to me is. That is why they are all doing this, you know, from 1 through to 6. And, you know, someone like Folks, he's probably just going to chip the ball around because he, and to be fair, he probably has a more, he's not a better bat than the guys ahead of him, but he's probably slightly more solid technique. So they are doing this on purpose because, and again, it's like people have forgotten was it 2021? England's fourth leading scorer was extras. They made a comically low amount of runs, right? They are not making a comically low amount of runs now. Every one of their batters' averages have improved under Bazball. I think that's right. They put it up on the screen the other day and I never got, but I think that's right. Every one of them. And if not, the vast majority, certainly.
I mean, they're utilizing their resources optimally and it won't always go their way, but I still think they should stick with it. Anyway, moving on to India, Yashasvi Jaiswal hit another double ton. He was unbeaten on 214 in the third innings. And well, in 7 test matches now, he has 300s. All of them daddy hundreds, that 170 odd on debut and then 2 double hundreds in this ongoing series versus England. He also leveled Wasim Akram's record of most sixes in an innings in test cricket, which is 12. And he's averaging nearly 72 after these 7 test matches. And I didn't catch the innings live, Jared, but you did. So tell me about it.
I think he was about 14 or 45 or 48 balls. Wow. And I didn't think he was batting poorly or anything, but clearly, you know, England were bowling okay. And he decided, I'm just going to give them this little session. And then he explodes after that. That's the most exciting thing about it. Because I think you hear, oh, he's, you know, equaled Wasim Akram's record of most sixes. This is counter-attacking innings. And, you know, and look at his strike rate overall. And I think, I can't remember what his strike rate was, but he's the second left-hander in Test cricket to make 214 in a Test match. The other left-hander was Bumble. Bumble did it in 398 balls, and he did it in, I don't know, whatever it was, 160 less, right? And so you hear all that, you think, what an exciting innings and everything else. But it's a fascinating innings because he did start slow, then he went after. He specifically went after Anderson, and I think I might have said this in the scoreboard yesterday. I felt very much like KP going after McGrath. You know, it felt like, I don't need to be afraid of you. I can understand why everyone else is afraid of you, but I'm really good and you're old. And so, you know, and he made there were two overs where I noticed where he just went, no, you're going this over, right? And Anderson bowled really well to try and stop him and it didn't work, certainly in that first over. And so, you know, he did that. I love the way he plays off spin. It's so perfect. I think other left-handers should copy his method to off-spin. You know, his ability to sort of attack on line and length. So if it's wide of off stump, he's like, well, okay, you've now made a mistake. I'm going to free my arms and try and punch this through the offside. I might get an edge, but I reckon I'll hit enough boundaries that I won't do it. And on length, the minute you over pitch, I'm going to take that down as well. That's kind of how left-handers should always play off spin, but he's really perfected that model. But if you think about this innings, as I said, started slow, started whacking it, got a sore back.
Hmm.
I think Rohit sent the physio out there to take him off the field. He said, no, I'm going to bat on. Eventually couldn't physically bat on. Mm-hmm. Then the next morning he has to wait for, you know, the night watcher. So he doesn't get to go out and start straight away, which for an opening batter, it's not the end of the world, but there are some opening batters that don't handle that well because they're so used to being out there from the first ball that it doesn't even make sense for them to watch. And then, of course, you know, he gets back in, starts back up again and attacks. I thought it was a magnificent innings. You know, England were a little bit broken in that second innings at times, but he was also part of the reason that they were broken, right? He absorbed their pressure and then he went to town against them. And, you know, he's so impressive almost every time you see him play. Thanks to the kind folks at FlexiSpot for looking after my office and my butt by sending me their E7 Pro desk that save your favorite desk heights at a touch of a button. You don't have to crank anything. This thing just finds the height that you like and you can work. And their BS12 Pro chair that supports my posterior while I'm recording, well, this ad and all my shows. If you need great desks, especially ones that change heights or the best quality chairs, head on over to FlexiSpot.
Yeah. And for those of you who want to know his story, we did a Footmarks on it. So 1 in 10 million, go check that out. And rest assured, if Yashasvi Jaiswal gets to 100, you can almost guarantee that he'll get a big one. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't even the only centurion for India, apart from, like, of course, we talked about Jadeja earlier. But Rohit Sharma hit 100. Shubman Gill fell 9 runs short in the second innings. Funny that people wanted to get rid of him not too long ago. And now India's top 3 is in the kind of form which is looking like a really ominous sign for Ben Stokes and his Baz bowlers going into the final 2 tests, even though Stokes is saying, like, we'll win this 3-2, but of course Stokes is saying that, right? That's expected.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't really worked out a method for Jaiswal yet, right? Mm-hmm. And so they can't. And I mean, he almost kept them in, was it the first test on his own or the second test on his own? Mm-hmm. I can't, whichever one was where he scored the majority of the runs. But yeah, second wasn't it, right? So he's already done that. This test match, you know, hugely impactful again. I think they worked out a method to Gill, and Gill, to his credit, and this is why you don't drop players just because they're not making runs. Gill, to his credit, has just worked on that and you know, he's trying to keep it out. He's still not looking as solid as we know he can be.
Hmm.
Rohit hasn't really had a massive impact on this series.
Yeah.
You know, a really important 100 in this test match, but not a massive impact. Him and Ashwin haven't had massive impacts in this series at all. You know, but so they're in this situation of Gill has changed and Jaiswal hasn't. If they can't work out one of these guys, and probably two of these guys in the next 2 tests, I don't know if they can win, especially with, you know, especially if it's Jaiswal, just because he's probably going to make 100 and he's probably going to make a big 100 again. And so it's very hard for them to overcome that. But yeah, they're behind. They're behind 2-1, but it's more than just being behind 2-1 at the moment, because I think you look at Jadeja, Ashwin. So Ashwin looked really good when he came back and bowled. And so we were commentating with Gareth Batty, and Gareth Batty had been saying to me, he's not right. His ball's not coming out right. A bit what I was saying before, he was saying that he could see Ashwin pushing the ball down, right? That he wasn't getting the snap on the ball. And you watch him in that second innings and you're just like, oh, the snap's back. And that is very, very dangerous for everyone else. Kuldeep's bowling brilliantly, and Siraj has just had a big spell. Like, there's a lot of Indian players who suddenly have confidence. And it's not, you know, I mean, Pattadar hasn't made any runs, right? Safraz is in his first game. They're going to learn a lot more about how to bowl to him. They've only bowled to Jarrell once. You know, you know, who knows if KL Rahul is going to come back in, all these different things. But as it currently stands, England have a lot of problems they need to solve for the next test. Whereas after the first and second test, I thought it was India who had all the problems they needed to solve. Mm. So it's completely switched.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you mentioned, the bowlers, bowling with their peak powers. We didn't even mention Bumrah. Of course, he's doing so well. And then also the batting.
He's good.
Yeah, clearly. And the batting is, you know, coming to the fore now. The top order is hitting runs. And you mentioned Sarfaraz. Now, I love those scenes in which Sarfaraz got his test cap and then he, you know, had that moment or shared that moment with his dad. And he's someone who had
Was it his dad who kissed the cap?
I think so.
Yeah, I think he did. I mean, I've never seen that. It's awesome. Hmm. I mean, because I remember when Ed Cowan got his debut, and I know Ed quite well, you know, and his wife, but I didn't know his father very well. I'd never met his father before. But I remember Ed telling me stuff about, like, so Ed's father basically threw his shoulder out by doing throwdowns when Ed was young. And we don't hear that story enough, right? Of the supportive, we know that people, a lot of these players have supportive parents and they do stuff like this, but you always hear about the stuff of he drove me here or she drove me here or whatever. But when you see it live, like that Sarfaraz moment for me was like seeing so many parents when they find out the news. And, you know, we made fun of it a little bit, the Nathan Lyon one. So Nathan Lyon, when he called up his father and said, you know, I've made my test debut, and his father went, well, at least you'll play one game. But the follow-on to that story that I've heard since we made that video, which is his father got straight off the phone afterwards because he couldn't speak, right? Because it's a family thing, right? That if you have an elite athlete, I mean, Joswell is a separate case, but in general, if you have an elite athlete, it's probably the entire family who have made sacrifices or tried to help or put you in an environment. And with Sarfaraz Khan, we got to see it. Right up in, and it was beautiful.
Yeah, and he even mentioned that he's even happier for his dad opposed to himself. And, you know, tears were shed. It was really priceless if you think of it. And then he repaid the faith. This is a guy who had been waiting for his test debut for a while, right? People have been talking about him.
Yeah.
He'd been scoring runs in domestic and, you know.
He was overrated, then he was underrated. I mean, he had everything, right?
He demolished the England Lions as well. His strike rate was also something that was coming under the scanner, and everyone was saying this guy could really be the answer to India's middle order woes in test cricket. And he went on to score 62 in the first innings and an unbeaten 68 in the second. Unsurprisingly, ends with an average of 130 after his first test. I almost expect that from Sarfaraz. And then that ramp stop that happened. Do you remember that?
It's one. I mean, I've seen this before because I remember talking to a player who played that shot, and I was like, "Why can't you abort it?" and the player said, "It's really hard because you've already because you're changing your physicality. You're already shortening the amount of time that you can react to the ball. And so, like, that's why you'll see sometimes, even if someone's bowled a short ball, they still try and flap at it. It's because there's kind of no other option. So the ability to turn around and make a decision of, no, I'm not in the right spot. You know, it's probably the next evolution of that shot in general. And he's not the first person I've ever seen to do it, but to middle the ball off the side of your bat in that position is quite special.
Yeah, I mean, definitely makes for a great little video clip that I did catch on Twitter. And I have expectations from Sarfaraz. I'm really chuffed for him. Nothing much to write home about for England, obviously. Duckett's 153, swashbuckling, you could say. Was playing at a very high strike rate. Is that the best we've seen him bat ever?
Oh, I hadn't really thought about that. I mean, I was at his 100 at Lords. I mean, that was against, you know, a struggling Ireland attack. It's probably the longest he's batted that well before. I know he's made quite a few double hundreds in first class cricket, but in Test cricket, we've kind of more seen him as a 40 to 70 scorer, an impact scorer. So his ability to go longer there, I love the way he's batting. I actually think that Asian conditions, he should be an absolute whiz in, because the seam bowlers can't bother him in the same way. And he can upset even very, very good spin bowlers, right? So he should be a player who averages much higher in Asia than he does everywhere else. I just love the way he strikes the ball. And I would say of all the England players, he probably has the easiest to get to weakness. You bang the ball in, short of a length, outside of stump. He just has this big angled bat. He doesn't leave the ball. And he plays like someone. I had a friend of mine who, when she was about 25, 30, broke her neck skiing, right? And obviously, she thought she was going to die.
Okay.
And they managed to save her life. And she is the most cheerful, happy person I've ever met, right? Because she feels like she's on... she's living her life that she wasn't supposed to live, right? And even when things go wrong, she's like, ah, well, you know, Ben Duckett kind of bats in a kind of way of, I'm lucky to have got my second chance. And I know it could go wrong at any moment here. So I'm just going to be Ben Duckett and we'll see how we go. And, you know, I was having a chat with a bunch of people yesterday about the sort of players who will make great, you know, Draymond Green, JJ Redick, you know, type podcasters, you know, Pat McAfee from cricket. And a lot of people were like, Ben Duckett might actually be the guy because he gives no shits and he just says what he says and he plays his cricket the exact same way.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the short ball thing because we saw that over and over and over again in the Ashes series. Anyway, before we end this segment, we've got two more Super Chats. You guys are giving us lots of money today, so we obviously will oblige. Amit Singh, first up.
Gotcha.
Yep. He says, can Yashasvi Jaiswal break Dawn's record of 974 runs in a 5-test match series? Yes, he can.
What has he got at the moment? It's got about 500?
Close to 600, no? There are two doubles in there, so...
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. Can he break that record? No. Because I think one of these test matches might be slightly lower scoring. I don't think it's particularly due to him. But I think at least one of these last two test matches will be... Whether the next wicket spins or the last wicket seems, I think we might see just a natural progression. Whereas the first three test matches, to be fair, been pretty good for batting. Not flat batting pitches, but pretty good for batting. But I'm just going on the weight of averages. At a certain point, we're probably going to have at least one wicket that isn't like that. So I'm going to say no. But, I mean, he's certainly within... what'd you say he was? He's around 600. So, yeah. He's certainly within a chance. Yeah,
I would say that if he gets a triple in one of these games, it's very much likely. Pango says, whether it is baseball or not, the fact of the matter is England never managed to play more than 130 overs during this phase and survived 100 overs only once in this series. Also, bowling has no role. That's not a question. I guess you just want it to be heard.
England never managed to play more than 130 overs. They're not trying to do that. And I went back to it before. I do think that is an overall weakness of it. You know, they are trying to score 550 in 100 overs, right? That's kind of their ideal baseball innings. They knew coming into this game that batting more than 100 overs for them was going to be rare. And, you know, remember, they also came into the series thinking the wickets were going to rag around a little bit more. But they came in thinking, how can we win without batting more than 100 overs? Which, again, Pango, it tells you that they're thinking about this very differently to everyone else. And you say bowling has no role. They picked a kid or two kids who had no first class experience, really, who no one thought was in the best five spinners in England. And one of them took a 7-wicket haul in the first match. They have manufactured wickets really cleverly at times in the first two test matches. I think India have started to get a bit smarter against their ways. And also I think it was in this match where they eventually just went to bouncers again. That I think that's one big issue for them, that their plan is kind of, a lot of their manufacturing of wickets is bowling bouncers, and that doesn't work as well in Asia. You know, it's not impossible, but, you know, it's not where it's going to work consistently anyway. And if you look at it, first test, the second test, they're really, really good at just getting Indian players to make mistakes. And a lot of that, we then go, oh, Indians have made all these mistakes. But I've been watching baseball since the start. It's weird how so many teams make mistakes against them. They're very good at putting you in a situation where you will make an error, right? Where you have to take a tiny risk over and over again, but you're like, oh, it's such a tiny risk, it won't come back. I'm out. I mean, it's funny now they're 2-1 down and everyone's like, oh, England are terrible. It's like, well, okay, when they were 1-0 up, everyone was like, they were great. They're the same team in both iterations. The difference is India are playing slightly smarter cricket now. There is a higher variance in the way that England play. Coming into this series, I said that they had a higher ceiling than Australia did coming into the series in India. They also had a lower floor. Right? They could have lost this series 5-0. They were bloody close, and you know, they were in the game in the first two tests, and as Bayram said at the start, what were they? 33 for three and then Joe Root dropped that catch. Pango, would you be saying this if they managed to bowl India out for 150 in the first innings, right? We've got to remember that there is an element in cricket to all of those things, that if Root takes that catch, we don't know what would have happened next. You know, Safraz would have had to come in early. Jarrell would have followed in. They got an absolute armchair ride because of the work that Jadeja and Rohit did. Cricket, that game could have been entirely different. England have given themselves a chance to win all three test matches. And I promise you, if they come here and played any other way, they would not have had that chance. They're just not good enough if they had played normally, and they would have picked, you know, Liam Dawson and, you know, Moriarty and all that. And that's not saying those aren't talented players. I'm saying they went in with a very clear plan, and it upset India for a little while. But I always said that, you know, eventually it's going to come down to talent. And that's where England is a little bit behind some, you know, Australia and India.
All right. We actually have two more super chats. So you guys really don't want me to go to the PSL game today. That's fine. Shri says, reaction to Root dismissal in Talk Sports should be trademarked. You have to commentate to World Feed, or you have a different live footage to talk over. I think that's just a question on where he can listen to you commentating, Jared.
Thank you for the Root dismissal. Have you seen the video? I'll send it to you later if you haven't seen it. Because the thing is, we know we're being streamed, right? And you know you're being streamed 90% of the time. It's the rare moments when something goes wrong with the technical stuff, or, you know, or I think there was one moment where one of Batty's friends did something well and he forgot he was on camera. And then obviously the Root wicket, I wasn't worried about being on stream. So me and Bumble certainly have very interesting reactions, very separate kinds of reactions there. You have to commentate on the world feed, or you have a different live footage to talk over. So I'm not exactly sure what you mean by that, but essentially what we do is we were recording from India for the first two tests. I was back in the UK, of course, but the most of the team were in India. We have the feed directly from the ground. It's virtually no delay. It's like really, really live feed. We get that straight away and we commentate off that, but the sound effects are all mashed up. So it sounds like we're commentating from the ground. And in fact, in that last test, we had like two people commentating from the ground and one person commentating from the studio, all in the same ball. That's how much technology has changed. There's some incredible technology when it comes to all those sorts of things. And you know, we talk sport. We've also done non-England matches before. We did India, New Zealand a few years ago. And I think we did another series as well. So there will be more and more cricket being commentated on by TalkSport. So if you go over to the TalkSport cricket channel, and anytime we're live, it probably means we're commentating.
All right. Last super chat before we can take a break. Pidyut asks, Bazball with Prime Anderson, Broad, fully fit. Leach could have been different. New Zealand under Baz had Trent, Bolt, Saudi in their prime, and Kane playing like he usually does, and they became the big four. Thoughts? I mean, of course you bring in their best ever players and they'll be better, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure Broad would be magnificent in Asia. I'd have to go back and have a look at his record, but I always thought that Anderson was really good in Asia and it didn't work as well for Broad. Leach not being fit. Again, this goes back to they've got other issues going on. Right. And they're now getting to a similar point where we see with the West Indies and, you know, New Zealand and Sri Lanka and these smaller teams, where Liam Dawson might have been picked for this series. He might have not made himself available because he had all these contracts available to him in the SA20 and whatever else. Is he playing in PSL as well, Dawson?
Yeah, he has. Not right now. Yeah. He's not playing right now, but he has won the PSL as well, I believe.
Yeah. So, you know, and IL20 and all those things, they're all coming at the same time.
He has
time.
A World Cup so medal, you're going to say to Liam Dawson.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're saying to Liam Dawson, we want you to come and play in the series, but chances are we won't pick you ever again. But you're going to annoy the contract that you've already written. I think that would have been a little bit awkward. If this was classical Bidyut, what would have happened is when Leach wasn't fit, Dawson would have come in. And he's not the same bowler that Leach is, but he's similar. And he's obviously a much better batter, and that would have really, really helped. We have already seen England do, you know, good things with injuries and with players missing and everything else during the Bazball era. So it's not just about having your full strength team. It's very hard to go to India, and I think Brook is a really interesting one to have. We don't know how Brook would have gone. He might have failed, right? But Brook probably would have at least been able to come in for Bairstow. They would have felt comfortable doing that. And that would have given them maybe a difference maker batting at number five, right? And at the moment, Bairstow just hasn't been able to get any runs. And, you know, it doesn't look like he's about to score any runs, if we're being honest. And, you know, that's an issue from that
as yeah, well. And with that, we'll close this segment off. Of course, it's gone on for about 50 minutes. Someone even complained in the comments that you guys have spent 50 minutes on or 45 minutes on India and England. And those of you who are wondering whether or not why we didn't talk about Ashwin's 500 scalp, because we've got an entire footmarks coming on it. So we didn't touch on that topic right now.
We actually were only going to talk about it for 25 minutes and then we got like 10 super chats, I think is part of the reason that we went on a little bit. Yep. If you guys want to ask different questions in the super chats, we will definitely answer them as well.
Yes, we will. And keep an eye out for that footmarks on Ravi Ashwin that's coming up. We'll take a short break on Overthrows. You're with Behram and Jared, and stay tuned after the short break. We'll be back. All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 4 of Overthrows. You're with Behram and Jared, and let's talk about New Zealand versus South Africa. So the Kiwis chased down 267 with ease in the second test match at Seddon Park versus a depleted South Africa. They won the series 2-0. And Kane Williamson has now scored 7 tons in 7 test matches. He has equaled Yunus Khan's record of 5 4-inning or 4th innings test hundreds. And in the last 12 times or 12 occasions where Kane has crossed 50, Jared, he has gone on to 3 figures in 11 of those. And that is quite a special conversion rate.
Look, I remember talking to some people close to him when his elbow injury happened, and they were like, he may never come back the same. And he kind of looked like that might be the case for a little while. It's just magnificent that hasn't happened. And, you know, he has worked out what he needs to do. And I don't know if the elbow just feels better or whether he's just slightly changed. Do you know the story about Len Hutton having his left arm was an inch or 2 inches shorter than his right arm?
I did not know that, no.
So Len Hutton made it as a test cricketer and had a normal length, you know, matching arms, I assume, or roughly matching arms, as much as anyone's are. And then I think it was a car accident. I should remember what happened, but something happened to him. He ends up with a problem with his arm, so it's 2 inches shorter, and he comes back and still absolutely dominates. So it's happened before, but sometimes it doesn't, right? Sometimes you just can't get that feeling back in your hand, or, you know, the bat never feels right again when you pick it up. And I remember there was a player, oh God, I forget who it was, who had a knee injury in the 90s, and they were telling me that their bat path never felt the same after. They did everything. They changed their bat path. They changed their handle. They changed all these different things, but they just couldn't get it to flow through, and eventually they just had to give up the game. So for Williamson to go from that to where he is at the moment, I mean, this isn't a great attack. You know, shout out to Dane Pete for doing great work in the first innings. But this is, you know, no one's saying that this is a brilliant attack. And there's always going to be until Williamson starts to dominate, you know, certainly Australia and Indian attacks, there's always going to be a question mark over him because he does make so many runs against the lower attacks.
I mean, that's fair. But then again, he had, what, 300s in 4 innings in this series? So whatever attack you score that against, that's still a lot of runs. And mentioned that this was the highest ever chase at Seddon Park. So it's not, you know, easy batting fourth over there. And he scored.
No, I mean, to be honest, when Bettingham, I can't remember what, I think when they were, what, 200 for 3, I want to say. Well, 200-ish for 3. And Bettingham was batting. South Africa were favourites, right? Like, and should quite rightly have been favourites and probably should have made them chase 300, 350. So I think if you're talking from a team perspective, I think New Zealand did great. But again, it goes to, you know, them losing to Bangladesh. Was there a test match against Sri Lanka? Like, they've played a lot of cricket at home where after being untouchable at home, they suddenly look very touchable at home, Bayram.
No, definitely. But still valuable World Test Championship points earned, even if it was defeated South Africa. And also, unfortunately, Kyle Jameson was injured again. I think we jinxed him last time we spoke about him on the show. But his replacement, right-arm pacer William O'Rourke, he is, what, 21, 22, no more than that. He took 9 wickets on Test debut and 4 in the first innings, 5 in the second. Bagged up player of the match as well. I looked up his record and he has, now, after this game, 59 wickets in 16 first-class games at 25. And you just feel like New Zealand have unearthed yet another seamer in Test cricket.
I think that was the big issue as we started to see. You know, we know that Bolt's easing off and Southie's probably on his last few years and Wagner's been struggling. Jameson, this is probably never going to play. You know, he'll play, but he might never play consistent Test matches just because he's always been injured since for a long time now, and we I think you know Milne and Ferguson and, you know, and Henry, also quite injury prone. And it was whether they were going to come up with another younger bowler who could come through was the big question. You know, when they played England, they had Kugelein and Tickner.
Yeah.
And those are, you know, I was going to say, no offense to those guys, but Kugelein, who gives a fuck if we offend him? But, you know, no offense to player Tickner, but I could see how he can occasionally be handy in international cricket, but he's not a frontline regular bowler. Finding someone like, it's O'Rourke, is it? It's not Rourke. I want to say William Rourke, but it is O'Rourke.
And he's also quick, right? Very beautiful action. Enjoyed his bowling action.
Yeah. So you watch him and you're just like, that's what they needed. And, you know, we do a similar thing with the West Indies. Remember, the West Indies had Kemar, Shannon Gabriel, you know, and those older bowlers. And you just like, and then you see, you know, Seals come through. And now you see Shamar Joseph come through. And you're like, oh, great. Right? Like, that's what they need. Because quite often you get like a golden generation. And that's what New Zealand had. They had the best fast bowling stocks available, in the best four-man bowling fast bowling lineup in the world for a while, right? You know, and it was always going to end. You need to be able to stock that up with younger bowlers. I think we all know how good Matt Henry is. There were times in that first test where it looked like it was impossible to play Matt Henry. We just know he needs to get on the field more. But that hasn't been the case. And a lot of their bowlers have been very, very injury prone. So getting another younger bowler coming through, I think is really important for New Zealand.
Yeah, definitely good signs for them going forward. And coming to South Africa, you obviously mentioned Dane Peat. Such an interesting career, very stop start. You know, he's still played less than 10 test matches, I believe. And in New Zealand, you know, conditions where you don't really expect spinners to do particularly well. He took 5 wickets in the first innings, kind of put South Africa on track for an unlikely victory. And then even in the second innings, when New Zealand kind of just chased it down with 7 wickets in hand, he took the 3 wickets. So that's 8 wickets for the spinner. Yeah. And I found that truly remarkable.
Look, great effort by Dane. I did some commentary with him on minor league cricket. I think I've got my minor league cricket shirt on. Oh God, I can never work out which is left or right here. He's just a lovely person, really professional. And remember, that's what he's been playing, though. Minor league cricket was the last cricket that he's been playing. So some minor league cricket is very good. And sometimes you play against a person who owns a team and they want to play themselves. And, you know, you play in some of those tournaments in America. And again, I might fly in Nicholas Puran or Rakim Cornwall. But you might also be playing, you know, Bayram's cousin. Like the quality, you know, the variance of these leagues is huge. To come out and take 8 wickets in a test match, I think is special. And look, I liked him years ago, and having met him and chatted to him, you know, really interesting guy as well. I'm just glad that, because I don't know what this does to his American contract and all that sort of stuff, right? I think he knew he was good enough, and I don't think South Africa thought he was good enough. He's come over, he's gone to New Zealand, he's taken 8 wickets in, because he didn't play in the first test, did he?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah. Taking 8 wickets in the one test they gave him a chance for, proved to himself and to everyone else that there was a lot more in the tank than they thought about. And I think it's fair to say, I don't say he feels bitter, but I do think there's a part of him. I remember talking to a lot of the modern South African spinners, and they were like, it was really tough when we started our careers, but South Africa's really treating spinners a lot better and everything else. And I threw that question to Dane Peat, and he was the only one who was like, no, they still hate spinners. So I think he has an issue there that, you know, and it's wonderful that he got a chance to go to a random place like New Zealand and just, you know, take wickets. So good on him. You know, and they needed, I feel sorry for all those players. Don't get me wrong. They're getting test caps and they'll be able to tell people they play test cricket forever. But, you know, their coach basically said, guys, you're not that good.
Yeah.
And they're not that good, right? And they know they're not that good. And they know why they're playing. And, you know, we had it with World Series cricket in Australia, and we've had it with strikes and West Indian players. We've seen this before. But they are still professionals, and they still do know what they're doing. And I think Dane Peat and some of the other performances we saw, Bettingham aside, because obviously Bettingham is a star. No one's got any issues with him. But with some of those other players, I think they had a point to prove. They pushed New Zealand. you can't, you know, they put themselves, as I said, they were very close to getting themselves in a situation where they would not lose that game. And unfortunately, they just gave New Zealand enough of a chance that it didn't work for them.
Yeah, end of day three or whatever it was, you felt like they were in with a shout. And big up to both Dane Peat and David Bellingham. Not Bellingham. Bellingham is a footballer. Who also...
Did I say Bellingham? No,
I said Bellingham. Almost said Bellingham, okay. And then I corrected myself to say Bellingham. But anyway, he really has solidified his spot, right? Started off well, now has his maiden test done. And what interests me in his story is that this is a guy who left South Africa, kind of gave up on his South African dream to Durham and started playing cricket there. And here he is having his moment under the sun. And he is a sure shot starter for South Africa in test cricket for at least like 10 tests in the future, right? He's earned that.
Yeah. I mean, I thought the way he batted against India probably earned him, you know, a lot of respect as well. So yeah, there's a lot of talent from him. Yeah, you're right. Didn't see himself at the front of the queue. Disappeared, went off to play county cricket. But he's come back as probably a better bat than he was when he was just in South Africa as well. And, you know, we saw again the class of him. I don't know what percentage of the runs that he scored in that second innings, but it felt like he scored all of them.
Yeah. Also, like, he averages 49.5 odd in first class cricket and also in test cricket now. So those are really solid numbers. This is someone that South Africa should stick with, because if you look at their batters in the recent past, they struggled to get to that 40 mark. So here's a guy who's touching 50. So there's something there. Anyway, let's move on to Sri Lanka versus Afghanistan. Now, the last time we spoke on overthrows, Sri Lanka were 2-0 up versus Afghanistan in the ODI series. And a week later, they have successfully whitewashed Afghanistan in that series, won it 3-0. But, you know, it's the manner in which they won that last game, which kind of is special. Of course, Afghanistan kind of got to 266. The usual performers, Rehmat Shah and Azmatul Omarzai, they got 50s. And you thought that, okay, 266, let's see where they go. This goes. Sri Lanka chasing it down in 36 overs is not what we saw coming, right? And again, we spoke about Partham Nisanka last time when he scored a double 100. He again scored a quick fire ton. And Avishka Fernando scored a 66 ball 91. So there has been this clear shift in Sri Lanka's approach to ODIs, and that is very refreshing.
Yeah, I mean, I think we noticed it most with Kusal Mendes in the World Cup. Remember when he went absolutely ballistic? We were like, wait, what's happening here? When did he do this? And Nisanka is another one. Who's the coach? It's Silverwood, isn't it? Is their coach? Is he still their coach?
I think so.
Yeah, I think that's right. Interesting. I remember when Bayliss took over England and he sort of said to the guys, like, why not just play your best shots and be free, and we won't drop you because we think you're the best, you know, amount of players, and stop worrying about technique and everything else and go out there and put pressure back on the bowlers. And you know, it's a very extreme way of thinking about cricket. And, you know, we've seen McCullum with a slightly different version of a similar kind of thing. We know those guys are talented. I mean, Kusal Mendes, let's be honest, was supposed to take over from Mahela and Kumar.
Yeah.
Right. You know, Nisanka has made a lot of runs already, as I think we talked about last week.
Up to strike rate as well, which is good for him.
Well, that's what I mean. So we know they're talented. Now give them freedom. And I think if you watched Sri Lanka bat, probably 2019 World Cup, my memory of them was they were a team who was actually very attacking in the first 10 overs. And then they kind of didn't know what to do after that. So I do think it's kind of within them still, that freedom. And, you know, I think Sri Lankan batting is probably less structured than if you look at the other two major or even three major Asian nations, Bangladesh, you know, kind of dour batting, India, very technically correct. You know, there's an inbuilt conservative nature built into Pakistan batting at times and everything else. But if you go through the history of Sri Lanka, it's not quite been the way.
Not at all.
You know, weird methods and freedom and willing to bat in their own way, even in the face of criticism and disbelief at times from other
teams. If you think about it, they're trailblazers kind of in that regard. If you look at the 90s team.
They're exactly. And then but you know, it's always been there. And it's, you see it in test cricket as well. It's not just something from one day cricket, although that's obviously where they got the most fame. So I can kind of, I think if you have the talented players and they're not making runs, and there were so many of these guys between the age of 22 and 28 that weren't doing very well. And what happens is, you know, we've talked about this before, that Sri Lanka picked this young player. They're obviously really talented. For 6 years, they're sort of in and out the side. They never really do anything. Then they get really, really good when it's almost too late, and they don't get the most out of them. If you can foster an environment, kind of in what we're talking about with baseball, but even before baseball, and which is what baseball is based on, right? The white ball team. Foster an environment where you say, you're the best eight batters in the country, right? We want you to feel like you're not going to get dropped. Go out and play the way that you played when you were a kid. Go out and play the way that feels best for you. If we need to make slight tweaks, we'll make slight tweaks, right? It makes a lot more sense. So I who knows what's going on behind the scenes over there, but it does feel like there's something different happening.
Yeah, definitely feels like something is brewing, and all of their batters performed in that ODI series. So that's good news. And that opening pair is something they could really, really like kind of build towards the next World Cup, because I think not playing the Champions Trophy kind of takes the pressure off of them. So they have time to build a solid unit. They also won the first T20 out of three in Dambulla. And finally, the day has arrived, Jared, that Wanindu Hasaranga came good with the bat. He came in at 4 for 55, so Sri Lanka were in a spot of bother. And from there on, he scored 67 of 32 deliveries. He is their captain as well. And we kind of did see that coming.
Do you know what? There's a long history in cricket. I've only ever looked this up in Test cricket, but I think it's the same in limited overs, if I remember correctly, of all-rounders who captain only becoming good at batting when they captain. You know, so Imran, Heath Streak, and there's this like bunches of them when you go through. Vittori maybe was another one. There's all these different guys. And it's just because you gotta.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? They've just got to focus a little bit more on it. Whereas before, you know, suddenly the runs matter. And I'm not saying that that is definitely the case here, because I do think that he had underperformed with the bat so far. But look, it's fantastic that we're seeing the kind of player that I think well, he's this kind of player that I thought I saw when he first came through, which is he could take wickets, he's very hard to handle, and he can smash you out the park. It's an incredibly exciting package, right? Like who wouldn't want to talk, you know, who wouldn't want a cricketer like that? I remember, I reckon it was Tawatia when I was working for RCB, and they were telling me that there was a guy out there who could bowl leg spin and also whack it. And I was looking at his numbers and I was like, I don't know, I'm not quite as sold. And they were like, nah. And he went for an absolute fortune. That's the cricketer everyone wants, right? They want the guy who can hit sixes and spin the ball both ways. That's like the ideal white ball cricketer.
Yeah, he is one of the hottest commodities in T20 cricket going around. And if he can bat that way, he might become the hottest T20 cricket commodity. It was a tight game. Afghanistan could have chased this down. Sri Lanka got 160. Ibrahim Zadran also scored 67. Was unbeaten though, 55 deliveries. So he kind of still is an anchor in the format. He's going to have to figure out what to do over there. The star for Sri Lanka with the ball was the slinger, Mathisha Pathirana. Still only 21 years of age. Seems like he's been around forever, because of course he's a Chennai Super Kings player. And return figures of 4 for 24 in just his second T20 international. And I just find it...
He did well in the SA20 as well, didn't he?
Yeah, I think so. And that's what I find strange, right? Really, really strange, that how has this kid only played two T20 internationals thus far? Because clearly, you know, he is special.
I think you're right. I think that he's not a bowler that naturally fits into all situations. So in franchise leagues, you have the ability to kind of mold your team around freakish talents. So if you have Samuel Badri in your team, you just don't pick two fast bowlers who need the new ball, right? Like, you know, you could do that. Whereas if Samuel Badri is playing for the West Indies and the West Indies have their three best seamers are all new ball dependent, they've got an issue. You know, I always go back to the Scotland cricket with the two left arm finger spinners. Like, you can just be unlucky in international cricket that your players are like that. And when you have a player like Pathirana who is unique and probably needs to bowl overs at different times to a normal bowler, that doesn't always suit your team. And maybe that's part of it. But I do think they've been a little bit too cautious with it. Especially considering, when was the World Cup? Like,
he was part of that team, but he was a late entrant, wasn't he?
No. The T20 World Cup.
2022.
Like how long ago?
A year and a half.
Yeah. It's a long time for him only to have played. Like, surely you just throw him in for a couple of a game every now and again. No, don't put any pressure on him. Just say, look, you're not a full-time member of the game team yet. We know you still work your stuff. I know they've been developing him so he bowls better with the new ball and in the middle overs. Even some of the franchises have been working on that with him. But you just throw him in for a game every now and again. And it does seem weird that he's played so little. But look, he's clearly, if he can continue on the rate he's going, he's going to be a very, very good T20 bowler. And we will see more people with the sort of Malinga-style actions, I think. I wonder, looking back, if Jeff Thompson played T20 cricket in the free market era, whether we would have had a bunch of people who would have come in and bowled like Jeff Thompson afterwards, or whether just in those days it just wasn't possible. But you could see with Malinga why it makes sense to copy those kinds of actions.
Yeah, and we've seen so many, right? Malinga-esque actions ever since Malinga. There's Aman Khan for Pakistan who also has a slingy kind of action. But Pathi Rana is the real sling, right? He's not just messing around over here. That's proper slingy. And maybe this can kickstart his career for Sri Lanka, because 4 for 24 in a game that Sri Lanka could have lost against Afghanistan without Rashid, I think that definitely counts for something. Anyway, final topic of overthrows. Australia's women, the Southern Stars, have defeated South Africa by an innings and 284 runs in Perth in the solitary test match that they were set to play. And it was as commanding as ever. But that performance by Annabel Sutherland, she was the star of the show, right? Scoring 210 runs in an innings, that's amazing on its own. Put that on one side and then add the fact that she also got 5 wickets across 2 innings. That is as complete a performance as you could ever ask for in women's tests. Or any tests.
This was a really interesting game. I don't know how much you were following it, but early on, obviously, South Africa got rolled for 76. Mm. Do you remember what Australia were?
No, I didn't follow it too closely.
They were 12 for 3. Ooh. And I was thinking, what the hell is going on here? This is going to be incredible. And they've gone from 12 to 3 to 575. And, you know, I think Beth Mooney made some runs, but the majority of the runs obviously come from Alyssa Healy and Annabel Sutherland. There's that great tweet by Hypercourse, wasn't it? That Alyssa Healy and Mitchell Starc, their 14 players with a high score of 99 in test match cricket across men's and women's game. And two of them are married to each other.
Also, just on that, that gets wilder, that stat. So that's their highest score, Alyssa Healy and Mitch Starc, 99. We know that. And they're 2 of 14 and they're married. But also both of them got 99 in their 9th test match. It's getting creepy because 9, 9, 9, 99, weird.
Yeah, it's like a freaking Beatles song at this point. So Alyssa Healy and then Annabel Sutherland, as you said, and Ashley Gardner, I think, made some runs. I think Kim Garth might have made runs as well.
Not sure, but Ash Gardner hit 65. Beth Mooney has scored consistent runs throughout this entire series, like T20s, ODIs. So she got another 78. So we expected that from her. But, you know, even though those performances are great, 210, like a double 100 for a woman in test matches on its own is really, really huge.
Oh, no, it's incredible, isn't it? And do you know what? It's huge if you do it in the top order, but was she batting 6 or 7?
I think 6.
I think she was down the order. Yeah. Look, I think she's a real, it's funny, actually. You know, I saw the father play, obviously, who was the CEO of Cricket Australia for a long time. And in another era, I think he would have played a lot more first-class cricket, but it just happened to be that he went up against Merv Hughes and Paul Rifle and Damien Fleming and, you know, all those really, really talented seam bowlers, Tony Dottomade, that were just better than him. You know, guys like Colin Miller and David Saker had to leave states, right? And James Sutherland never had a go. But, it might be one day that his work as CEO of Cricket Australia is outshadowed by his work of his own progeny, right? Because Will Sutherland might go on to be the stars of this next decade for, you know, Will Sutherland is kind of a modern day Tom Moody type player. And who knows? I'm pretty sure the first time I saw Annabel play, she would have been quite young. I remember her bowling a lot more than her batting, but I always thought she could bat a little bit. But I think the games I saw, she was batting down the order, like maybe 8, 9. Like she's batting 6 in the test side and making a double 100. That's remarkable. And it's almost like her and her brother are in this like I don't know if they're competitive with each. I would love it if there was competitiveness between them, because like you'll see a game or a season where like Will dominates and Annabelle's like really, really good. And then the next year it's flipped around. And it almost seems to be game by game now of like, well, you know, Annabel, well, you've been playing for Australia for a while. Well, I'm going to come in and play for Australia now. It's like, oh, well, you're going to play for Australia. I'm going to make 200 batting at number six in a test match after we were 12 for three. It's just, it's a fascinating little pattern between them. Very similar kind of cricketers as well, by the way. Although I think, I'm not sure Will's ever going to make double 100 batting at number six for Australia. But it's great to have, you know, a brother. There's something, do you remember when the McGlashan brother and sister played for New Zealand? I think they're both
wicketkeepers. Yeah, they were both wicketkeepers. And I remember
just thinking that was so... It was just so cool. Yeah, and the Joyces as well, you know, when you had Ed playing and then you had the 17 of his brothers and sisters playing. There's something quite cool about, like, having brothers and sisters playing at the same time. And I think it's really, really cool. And the fact that they're, as I said, that they're similar kinds of cricketers makes it even weirder, but it's a fantastic effort. I think, you know, we just had Mel Lanning say that it's tough to bat in test cricket for women just because you don't really know how to do it because you haven't had all the hours of practicing and getting ready and, you know, playing in first class games and everything else. And for Australia to make that big a score. And I really, you know, it's quite sad for the South African women who obviously were having a pretty good tour up until that point. But good on them for playing. And I think they saved a little bit. I mean, as much as you can when you lose a game by an innings and 4,000 runs. But they saved a little bit. I think there was a late partnership. I want to say Chloe Tyrone might have made some runs. And, you know, they started at least in the last innings, they looked like a team that should be playing tests. Whereas the first two innings, outside of those three wickets they took early on, they did not look like they should be playing tests.
Let's be fair. And Hypercost, as always, has given us a fantastic stat. Says Annabel Sutherland now holds the records for highest score by a woman at both number six and number eight in test cricket. So yeah, we doff our hat off to Annabel, that's for sure. And Darcy Brown as well was pretty impressive, right? Three wickets in three tests prior to this one. Takes seven in this one, including a five-wicket haul that derailed South Africa in the first inning. So that was quite spectacular as well.
I thought she made runs. Did she not make runs?
Did she?
Wait, have I got the scorecard here?
She made.
Oh no, she didn't bat. She didn't bat. She was the one who didn't bat. So yeah, they saved her all of her awesomeness for bowling. I think, you know, it's really interesting. The whole card of the Australian team. I think coaching and selecting women's test cricket must be the hardest job because you just don't really have the information that you would like, and you know, it's so random. You know, we need some random entrepreneur to make a women's professional league, right? In 4 or 5 day cricket, so we can we can help out everything. Anyway, Elon, if you're listening,
We have one more super chat, so we'll take that and end overthrows before we can move on to Uncovered, and then I'm going to run to Gaddafi or something. So. Let's see.
Look at Bayram. Just panicking. Yeah.
Dr. Ayush Chauhan asks, what about Rajat Patidar's form? Should he be given a longer run or drop for the next test if KL Rahul is not fit for the next? I think you meant to say is fit for the next test.
Did you see his two dismissals in this test?
I remember his first dismissal ever, and that was quite unlucky.
So his first dismissal ever, you're right, was unlucky. I've actually forgotten about that. His second dismissal... his third dismissal, whatever it might have been. He got this ball that sort of stopped on the surface and he did something weird. And he somehow batted it to cover. It was remarkable. Like, it was such a weird wicket, like Tom Hartley. And then in the next one, he got another half tracker and went out. I would almost not at all be worried about his form. I would be worried about his general luck. Like, I wouldn't be walking under a ladder. If he sees a black cat, he should run in the other direction. I think he looks like an organized, really good player. If KL Rahul's not around, I think you pick Patidar. But I you know, if not, KL can come back into the side. But I wouldn't hold anything that's happened against Patidar, being that three of those dismissals are just things that probably throughout his whole career are not going to follow him around.
Yeah. Also, if you're interested in his story, we covered that as well in that Footmarks podcast, 1 in 10 million. Definitely go check that one out. And on that note, let's call it a day on Overthrows. Uncovered will be coming in up shortly. And thank you to everyone who was in the comments and for your interactions and super chats and all that money. We'll be back with another episode of Overthrows next week. And that'll be all for now. And subscribe to this channel of Jared's and the other one. And like, share and subscribe, all of that good stuff.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. Feeling lazy about promoting your podcasts and videos? Momento FM has your back. Their seamless platform cuts and promotes all your content effortlessly. It's laziness approved. Try Momento FM today.